Question the government denies.
And you now admit as government that herd immunity was the policy until March?
Not at all, no. Absolutely not. Our policy, from the outset, Andrew, the policy and the strategy...
So why is Dominic Cummings telling us that that's true?
Well, I can't speak for Mr. Cummings.
When he was fired last year, Cummings took a large amount of documents with him, allegedly proving his allegations. He will appear in the British Parliament on May 26, where he is expected to present what he has called crucial historical evidence.
But Dominic Cummings to come out now and say he doesn't... He believes this is a word, that was a load of rubbish and it was dangerous... begs the question, why didn't he say that now, when he was in a position advising the government?
But why has Cummings, who played an important role in Boris Johnson's successful 2019 election campaign, and was also the architect of Britain's campaign to leave the European Union, lashing out at his former boss?
He feels extremely sore, having been sacked from his position as Boris Johnson's chief advisor. So I think there's a question of personal revenge does come into it. But how far does he really want to push this? Does he want to push it to is in danger of toppling Boris Johnson? I suspect not.
Three lockdowns, more than 128,000 deaths, and a deep economic slump since the start of the pandemic. The British Prime Minister has hailed his government's vaccination program as a success. The question now is whether that parliamentary committee put Boris Johnson's security of tenure ahead of his responsibility for allowing the COVID-19 outbreak to soar in communities across the UK in the spring and summer of last year. Saeed Puriza, London.
Public outpouring against Israel in Pakistan. The streets of the mega city of Karachi flooded with protesters in solidarity with Palestinians. There is no letup to anti-Israel protest in this 220 million populated Muslim country after Israel attacked and desecrated Islam's third holiest site in the eastern Jerusalem al-Quds and imposed a unilateral war on Gaza. The huge collateral and human losses in the latest round of one-sided war imposed on unarmed Palestinians has once again become a rallying point to unify people from all segments of the society in Pakistan to join hands to protest against Israel.
We thank to Allah. Today people in every Muslim country stand by Palestinians. And by God willing, we would continue our war against Israel until we liberate Al-Quds Mosque.
The anti-Israel protests have been swelling in Pakistan despite a fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas administration in Gaza. Pakistan's government is feeling the heat of public pressure, which is reflected in country's foreign minister's rare and blunt remarks about Western media outlets on how they have been whitewashing war crimes of Israel against Palestinians.
Israel is losing out. They're losing the media war despite their connections. They are losing the media war. The tide is turning.
What are their connections?
Deep pockets.
What does that mean?
Well, they're very influential people. I mean, they control media.
I would call that an anti-Semitic remark.
Pakistan has rejected criticism of pro-Israeli lobbies and Western media, claiming that country's foreign minister's remarks were anti-Semitic. On the contrary, Foreign Minister's analogy about nexus between Israel and Western media has been welcomed across the Muslim world. Islamabad says the Western media has been covering up the massacre of Palestinians by propagating it as Israel's right of self-defense. On the other hand, whenever leaders of the Muslim countries speak truth about Israel's aggression and apartheid state's overgrown influence on Western media to whitewash its war crimes, they call it anti-Semitic. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Bishop Talbot Swan, a highly respected civil rights activist, expressed a sympathy and solidarity among the African American community for the Palestinians as outrage over Israel's actions has continued to grow.
If any people should resonate with what's going on in Palestine, it's black people in America. Even when we look at what's happening on the streets in our nation, many police departments across America actually go to Israel to be trained by the military in so-called counterterrorism strategies. And then they come here into black communities and employ those strategies on black citizens. So we fully understand their struggle. It resonates with us, and we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
For many, the fact the U.S. government funds Israel while reparations owed to black Americans have yet to be paid is hypocritical.
They can find nearly $4 billion a year to give to Israel, but they can't find any money to give to African Americans who descended from enslaved Africans. It's a travesty. It's a shame. And we're not asking for a handout. We're not asking for you to do us a favor. That's money that is owed. That's a debt that the United States has yet to pay.
Like many faith leaders, Bishop Swan reiterated his continued support for the Palestinians in the face of racist apartheid.
Oppressed people all over the world are watching what's happening. We are standing in solidarity with you. We are pushing and pressing for governmental structures to condemn the violence, to stop the funding of terrorism, because that's exactly what it is. And we want them to remain steadfast, to be strong, and to know that we are behind them.
The demands for the U.S. to stop funding Palestinian oppression and to implement justice for black America will continue as long as the status quo remains in place. Support for the Palestinians has undoubtedly intensified, with millions of people around the world condemning Israel, demanding an end to the occupation of Palestine. Richard Sudam, London.
With less than a month to go until the presidential election in Iran, people are discussing about the policies the next president must follow to solve their problems. Out of over 400 contenders, about 40 heavyweight ones claim their number one goal is to solve economic problems that have been growing during the past years. In order to see how these plans are feasible, we talked to some lawmakers regarding the objectives every hopeful must have in mind.
In every election, the economy is of great significance to people, especially at a time they've experienced tough times in the face of economic issues. Hopefuls make promises, but people must be watchful not to pin hope on their slogans. Their slogans must have a logical basis. In my opinion, what the country needs in terms of economy is a look at international capabilities. Of course, the sanctions are biting, but we can't say all our economic problems are because of the sanctions. Most of our economic issues are the result of not paying attention to domestic capabilities.
Another lawmaker told us the most important things a president must follow are transparency and accountability.
People expect the runners to be honest with them. They say the next president must have a comprehensive plan for the economic issues. It means the result of their plans must be seen in the economic basket of the families. Within the past 8 years, the government was waiting for decisions to be made outside the country. The next president should fight against corruption and injustice.
The MPs stressed that having good relations with the world for economic improvement is a must, but each country should rely on its own capabilities.
The livelihood of people and solving economic problems is the main slogan of most of the hopefuls for the 13th presidential election of Iran. They also say that they have detailed plans to improve the life quality of people. Human Abedi, Tehran.
For the second week in a row, a march in Paris for Palestine has been banned by the French authorities. The only authorized demonstration was a static gathering, but these restrictions had at least one positive outcome. It temporarily unified a broad spectrum of organizations. Trade unions, political parties, and many associations demonstrated all together against the Israeli war crimes and in favor of the Palestinian resistance. Long time not seen. The protesters also blamed the complicity of French President Macron with the Israeli war crimes.
It's in total hypocrisy.
It's total hypocrisy. The French government does not condemn the colonization and the ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem. The French government only condemns Palestinians when they defend themselves. Now there is a generalized outrage of all the Palestinians in Gaza, in Jerusalem, in the West Bank, in occupied cities since 1948, and in the refugee camps. Today, all these organizations act together to support the Palestinian resistance.
Many protesters salute the recent ceasefire concluded between Israel and Hamas, but they say it's a very temporary and partial ceasefire.
We're all happy about the ceasefire, but this doesn't fix all remaining problems. The colonization of Palestine by Israel has to be stopped. The political prisoners have to be released, and the apartheid policy has to end. It's a shame for the entire world. Macron said that Israel has the right to defend itself. It's a scandal. You don't defend yourself by killing children.
French President Macron indeed condemned the rockets fired by Hamas by saying that Israel has the right to defend itself. At the same moment, entire families and children died in Gaza under the Israeli bombs. His statement scandalized a lot of people.
We all want sanctions against Israel, divestment and a boycott of Israeli products so that pressure will increase to stop the colonization of the Palestinian territories. We denounce the complicity of the French government with Israel. France is not putting any pressure on Israel. Even worse, France collaborates with Israel economically and militarily.
The international NGO Human Rights Watch called the policy of Israel against the Palestinian population apartheid. These are strong words and a reference to the South African apartheid system decades ago. That system has been overcome by international pressure. Time to do the same with Israel.
The organizers here demand concrete sanctions against Israel from the French authorities and from the European Union. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
Yemenis have extended their congratulations to Palestinian people over the landmark victory of the resistance front against the criminal Israeli regime. They also say Yemen's financial support will persist until Palestinians regain all their usurped territories from the Zionist regime.
The victory of the Palestinian resistance was like a big blow to the Zionist enemy, who didn't expect the power of deterrence and the armed struggle that the Palestinian resistance showed in this battle, which prompted the Zionist entity to begin to recalculate its moves and declare a unilateral ceasefire in the beginning.
The spokesman for the anti-aggression parties of bloc lauded Iran for enhancing the financial and technical capabilities of Palestinian resistance factions. He said Iran has always been playing a key role in supporting the resistance front, mainly in Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria.
The Islamic Republic of Iran played a leading role via the Quds Force, which was led by Martyr Qasem Soleimani, and provided resistance fighters in Gaza with all kinds of weapons and training. There is also missile and financial support, and we thank the leadership in Iran for their unlimited support for the axis of resistance, whether in Palestine or Syria or in Lebanon.
During the 12 days of the Israeli aggression on Gaza, the Israeli attacks have killed scores of Palestinians, including women and children, and wounded more than 1,900 others, according to the Gazan Health Ministry, in what is said to be the fiercest war against Palestinians over the past 7 years.
Yemenis appraised the victory of the Palestinian resistance, saying it is a source of pride for the entire nation. They say this victory is the first step toward the full liberation of all occupied Palestinian territories. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
A ceasefire between Israel and Hamas took place on Friday after the worst violence in years, but some clashes broke out around Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem Al-Quds, where similar scenes touched off the Gaza conflict. Israel's bombardment of Gaza stopped after 11 days under a deal brokered by Egypt, which is negotiating with both sides on how to maintain stability. Right after the ceasefire, Palestinians took to streets in Gaza, embracing one another to celebrate the victory against Israel. Mosques also played the song of the victory of the resistance, and people in cars flied Palestinian flags. In order to look into different aspects of this victory, we attended a meeting in which Palestinian officials elaborated on the recent triumph.
It was a great victory for Palestinians because Israel lost around $2 billion following their defeat during this 11-day war. But they also lost billions of dollars as their propaganda machine failed, and all the world now knows about their media hype and the lies that they are trying to disseminate.
Iran's former ambassador to Jordan also talked to the reporters, saying that the Palestinian resistance is getting stronger day by day.
The blockaded Gaza is just 292 square kilometers, and it has been under siege for several years. But the Israeli regime didn't dare to conduct ground operations to occupy this small strip. It shows that Israel has suffered a strategic defeat this time again.
Finally, they set forth plans and ways on how to protect civilians during the wars.
Panelists at this conference also congratulated Palestinians on their great victory against Israel. Human Abedi, Tehran.
South Korea is betting big on semiconductors, with the country's tech giants investing billions of dollars in new plants and the government providing tax breaks. South Korean President Moon Jae-in celebrated construction of new facilities last week.
Our companies are taking a further leap. Over the next decade, Korean chipmakers will invest over 510 trillion won, or 450 billion U.S. dollars. Samsung Electronics will construct large-scale production lines for memory semiconductors and system semiconductors at its factories in Pyeongtaek and Hwaseong. And SK Hynix will establish a large-scale production base in Yongin.
This year, a shortage of semiconductors caused production delays and suspensions worldwide. Even South Korea's major car manufacturers Hyundai and Kia had to shut down periodically for lack of the key component.
South Korea produces about 20% of the world's semiconductors. The industry also plays a very important role in the South Korean economy, accounting for 20% of the country's exports. And recently, the price of semiconductors has been quite high, increasing profitability.
Samsung is South Korea's largest company and number one semiconductor producer. But its de facto chief, Lee Jae-young, is in jail, creating a degree of uncertainty amid the massive investment plans. Samsung's Lee Jae-young is scheduled to complete his 2.5-year prison term in July 2022 for bribing South Korea's former president. But calls are growing in many sectors, including almost two-thirds of the general public, according to a recent survey, for Lee to receive a presidential pardon, considering his company's importance to the South Korean economy. Samsung is also reportedly planning to construct another U.S. plant with a $17 billion investment. President Moon this week visits the U.S. as American officials seek to reduce tech dependence on China. Frank Smith, Seoul.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Come on. It's time to get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی. مسافرین گرامی، خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning, Mom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, targeting civilians, attacking the infrastructure, killing children, killing journalists, destroying media centers, and destroying residential units were all done by Israelis against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip during its latest onslaught. And in the occupied territories, the Israeli regime has continued to steal the land of Palestinians and attack the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the month of Ramadan and beyond. What does it take for the international community to condemn and punish the Israeli regime? And how much more do Palestinians have to suffer before that regime is stopped? Stay with us as we take a look at this month's debate. I'm going to start it off in Gaza City and talk to correspondent Ashraf Shannon. Ashraf, thanks so much for being with us. Well, Ashraf, tell us right now the overall situation. Looking at as far as the losses and the number of buildings and destruction, just fill us in on the assessment.
Yes, Marzia, right now the human situation is only getting worse as more bodies are found under the rubble. The officials in Gaza realizing how much damage that has been sustained. All of that has not been cleared yet. All the numbers that are coming out by some satellite stations or figures by the UN are not the real figures. You have to understand, it's not only about money. You have to understand also that the loss, it's not only the physical loss of people, the loss of memory, the loss of everything dear to people here who've been displaced over and over again by the Israeli regime. Wanton killing and maiming of women, children, and elderly people took place under the watchful eye of the international community. It's about time that the world rises up and stand up for the rights of the Palestinians, the people who have been oppressed by the Israeli regime for decades, Marzia.
Any hope from Gaza that actually the Israelis will be held responsible committing these crimes against humanity, basically going against the Geneva Convention? Any hope this time around that will happen?
Well, Palestinians here, they always hear about the international community, about the International Criminal Court, the Rome Statute, but they need concrete things, real things happening. They want Israel to be held accountable. They want Israeli leaders who sent those pilots to bomb their homes to hold accountable. And until that is done, there's nothing can help the Palestinians here.
Thank you so much for that update. Ashraf Shannon, correspondent on the ground there in Gaza City. I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate. Zakaria Odeh, coordinator of the Civil Coalition for Palestinian Rights, Al-Quds, and Ted Schmidt, former editor, Catholic New Times out of Toronto. Thank you both for being with us. I'm going to start it off with Zakaria. Now, since 1948, there have been crimes taking place in Palestine that, according to international law, could be considered as war crimes. And if you agree with that, why, after 73 years, is the international community impotent in stopping the Israeli regime in committing crimes against the Palestinian people?
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you. Yes. In fact, for the last 73 years of Israeli occupation since the Nakba, you know, we talk about the Nakba of the Palestinians. It took place in 1948, but it has been going on every day through the various Israeli policies. I mean, Israel have been for these years implementing a policy of forced displacement, where they have been taking over land, building settlements, expanding illegal settlements, Israeli discriminatory urban planning system, restriction on building for the Palestinian Arabs in Palestine as a whole and in Jerusalem in specific demolition of homes, because of the restriction on obtaining building permits. So Palestinians, they built without a permit because the Israeli institution, they don't provide the Palestinians with a permit to build houses. And if you build without a permit, then the houses will be demolished. So it's very important to mention that there are nearly 22,000 homes that are built in Jerusalem without a permit. What does that mean? That these homes are under the threat of demolition. So as well, the closure of Jerusalem, the restriction of access and movement for the Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza to access the city of Jerusalem. You know, Jerusalem is one of the main holy cities for both Christian and Muslim.
And let me just jump in here, Zakaria, because what I understand is that today you were in the middle of some attacks. Can you tell us what happened today in Jerusalem al-Quds that you witnessed?
Yeah, there have been a continuous and systematic harassment by the police in various neighborhoods of Jerusalem. As you know, one of the main neighborhoods I think you are aware of, Sheikh Jarrah, it's a neighborhood which has been since 1956. These were Palestinian refugees who were forced to leave their country as a result of the Nakba. And now there is an Israeli decision to evict and to force displace. We are talking about 73 families, nearly 500 people that the Israeli court has took a decision to evict them from their home and to replace them with Israeli settlers. You know, settling settlers in the occupied territories is a clear violation of Geneva Convention. It's a war crime according to Rome Statute. It's not only that what has been going on for the last weeks, that the Israeli settlers have been storming Al-Aqsa Mosque. Every day they have been entering Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the main holy places for the Muslims. So they enter the mosque, they do Talmudic or Israeli religious pray in the mosque, while they have been preventing the Palestinians from the rest of the West Bank and Gaza to access to the city of Jerusalem.
All right, stay with me, Zakaria. Let me get Ted in on this debate now. Ted, according to the Geneva Convention, war crimes are defined as these. I'm going to read the top four. Willful killing, torture or inhumane treatment, willfully causing great suffering or serious injury to body or health, extensive destruction of property. Now, none of these would be hard to prove when it comes to Israeli crimes. Just a video of the regime destroying buildings and killing whole families would be sufficient. So what will it take for the international community to make that transition and actually start holding Israel responsible for war crimes?
Well, it is happening. I'll start with quoting one of the great Israeli Americans, Jeff Helper, who's been living in Israel for 40 years. He asked the question that many of us are asking, how do they get away with it? For generations, they've been ignoring the Geneva Conventions. They've been ignoring international law. But, Marcia, let me just remind you what the big change is. In 1967, the Six-Day War, there were only three American networks. What has changed the whole equation here is the extraordinary proliferation of the Internet and social media. The great researcher Norman Finkelstein, in his in one of his books, made the point: this time you've gone too far. And around 2008, people began to totally get the picture that they weren't getting the picture. And now with social media, people are beginning to understand for the first time. Sadly, it takes a massacre, another massacre. And I would say another one, starting in 2008, 2014, 2018 at the Gaza Wall, where 2,000 to 3,000 people are killed with nothing said to Israelis. So my point is that we in North America live in the culture of Disneyland. It's hard to keep track of things. There's so many diversions. But now it's even on the front page of the New York Times, a very good article. I never thought I'd see it. So social justice takes a long time. I've been at this for much of my adult life, and I know things move slowly, but now they're catching up. People around the world, you'll see international demonstrations, and I'm relatively hopeful now that people begin to see exactly what's been going on. Zechariah has pointed out exactly what's happening on a day-to-day basis to Palestinians. Most North Americans do not see this, and so they're finally starting to see. And so that's a big point for me, is that we're finally even getting the New York Times to print decent articles, and Toronto paper, we're beginning to get some balanced coverage.
And Ted, I just want to stay with you for a minute, because you talked about most North Americans not getting the main story. And with that, we look at the situation when it is talked about as far as Palestinians. Rarely in these Western stations do they talk about the Christian Palestinians, that Christian Palestinians exist. Jewish Palestinians exist, as a matter of fact. Right. Why do you think that is never talked about? We saw Christians being attacked for Easter of this year by the Israeli regime forces, but you never see that really talked about in Western mainstream media.
Well, there's a lot of things they don't talk about in Western media. One of the sad things, because I've been to Israel, Palestine 3 times, is so many Christians have left. They're among the best educated people, and they've just lost so much hope. They can't wait to get out. They are very much a minority in a Muslim area, and so, you know, there's not much media coverage of that. You're exactly right. So I can't answer to that, but that's exactly true.
Isn't it odd that the countries that claim that they are Christian-based, that even for them, because they happen to be Palestinian Christians, then they choose to even ignore the Christians, not only in Palestine, but we can see throughout this region. Don't you find that odd in general?
Yes, I do. But the great Palestinian writer who worked in America most of his life, Edward Said, his great book, Orientalism, there's been a bias here in the West about anything to do with the Muslim world, but that's changed. In 1948, when Palestinians were dispossessed of their land, they lived in camps. Now they're among the most educated people in the Arab world, and they hold important positions at American universities. It's extraordinary. My own city here is one of the most diverse cities in the world, and when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood. I never knew anything about Islam. I never knew any Muslims. But the extraordinary change has been these voices are beginning to be heard.
Okay, great. Stay with me, Ted. Let me cross back over with Zechariah. Zechariah, now we have at least 65 Palestinian kids that were killed in this latest Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip. I mean, are the lives of Palestinian children important for the international community or not? And we should be hearing and seeing such outrage as what has taken place these 11 days, especially the death of this many children.
Unfortunately, the international community double standard when they deal with the issues. So when it comes to the Palestinians, so we feel that our lives and our children's life is not really that important, because I think, you know, this war against Gaza has been going on every few years. They go the same way and they destroy the buildings, they destroy the infrastructure, they kill people, they kill children. I think Israel is doing that because they have this impunity. I think it's time to stop the Israeli impunity and to take action. I think Israel will not continue to commit all these crimes and all these atrocities against the Palestinian people, whether in Gaza or the West Bank, and especially in Jerusalem, without the support or without the closing eye by the international community. Mm-hmm. So that's what we try always to talk to the international community. I think it's time that you should act. You should put pressure to stop this Israeli ongoing crimes and policies and atrocities.
And Zachariah, I'm so sorry because I'm short of time, but do you think with this, we're looking at the so-called international community, that it just proves that resistance is the only way? Your take on that?
Yeah, of course, because now we have been hearing, I think, now, for example, after the last war on Gaza, the last clashes, we have been hearing that the European Union, they are talking about there are other elements or actors in the occupied territories, which they meant in Gaza, like Hamas, that we need to talk to. We can't ignore. We need to consider. So unless people die, unless there is destruction, unless blood is really going down, so the international community will not move and will not do. And even in spite of all what's going, in spite of all these losses by the Palestinians, with their children, lives, destruction, still some European countries are blaming the Palestinians, and still they're saying that Israel has the right to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. We as a Palestinian, we don't have the right. We have no right. Our life is not really important, is not really matter. And it's important to say that all these escalation during the last few years of Israeli crimes and Israeli violation and atrocities has been taking place with the full support of the Trump American administration.
Okay.
You know, he was partner with the Israelis in all these colonization, apartheid, and crimes that are being committed against the Palestinian people.
All right. Well, Tad, what about that? I mean, it appears that Palestinians can't count on international law, international bodies to do anything. But what about the international civil society? We witness many, many protests around the world condemning Israel. Do you think that these actions or pressure can continue and that the civil society in the world can actually make this change and put pressure on Israel, like what we saw against apartheid South Africa?
I think
the big player in this whole equation is the United States. Change will not happen within Israel, Palestine. And the good news for me is that young Jews are understanding this, and they're saying, not in my name. American Jews are, many of the young people are having a transformation. They look on the screen and they say, this is not what Judaism is. They're moving away from Zionism, which is a false creed, and many are seeing it. And now you have wonderful people like Peter Beinart saying, I'm out. Zionism is not my Judaism. And so it's these very important, very well-educated young Jews who are in the streets. They're saying, not in my name. And I'm very, very hopeful that a change is afoot. It's not going to be the same thing, but it's going to happen in America. Slow but sure.
And Zachary, your thoughts and your perspective, what is it going to take for Palestinians to attain victory and total liberation? We've seen actually something interesting with the Palestinians being in solidarity, whether it's the occupied territories this time around or Gaza Strip. Yeah. Your take?
Yeah, I think what's happened during the last few days, it never happened before. You know, it united the Palestinian people everywhere in the West Bank, in Gaza, under the so-called the Green Line or 48. In the diaspora, in the camps, in the Arab countries, in Europe, everywhere. So what happened, the Israeli aggression during the last 2 weeks has been uniting the geography and the people as well. So I think that the solidarity and the support, whether in the Arab area, region area, or internationally, We have been witnessing an increase of the solidarity and the support by the international community, the people. I think what's after this war and this uprising in the old part of Palestine is not the same as it was before. I think this gave a message to everybody, to the Israelis, to the Americans, to the international community, which says that people will not subject to all these colonial settler apartheid regime. They are rejecting the American policy here and the American support to the Israeli governments in the occupied territories and in Palestine. I think we have a hope that things will change. There is a change, and in addition to what our friend he talked about, there has been changes within even the Jewish community, the young generation in the U.S., in Europe, everywhere. So this gives us a good hope that there will be a good opportunity for a change for this situation.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with us on this debate at Press TV. Zachariah O'Day, coordinator of the Civil Coalition for Palestinian Rights out of Al-Quds, and Ted Schmidt, former editor Catholic at New Times out of Toronto. Thank you both. And always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off right here from our international studios in Tehran. Thank you and goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
As healthcare workers in Gaza cope with the aftermath of the Zionist regime forces' 11-day bombardment campaign, health officials have recently expressed fear that the effects of thousands of Palestinians crowding into shelters for safety from the airstrikes was becoming apparent as coronavirus cases appear to surge in the besieged territory. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Julia Conley, reporter. This article is published under the heading Gaza Expecting Surge in COVID Cases Due to Crowding While Sheltering from Israeli Bombs. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. as healthcare workers in Gaza cope with the aftermath of the Zionist regime forces' 11-day bombardment campaign, health officials have expressed fear that the effects of thousands of Palestinians crowding into shelters for safety from the airstrikes was becoming apparent as coronavirus cases appeared to surge in the besieged territory. More than 1,900 people were injured in the IDF attacks, with people of all ages crowding hospitals and forcing officials to evacuate COVID-19 patients from critical care wards to make room. According to the Washington Post, about 70,000 people in Gaza sought refuge in schools, underground shelters, community centers, and other sites as residential areas were bombed and homes were destroyed. Thousands of people also crowded into relatives' homes. Dr. Shadi Awad, head of respiratory care at Al-Shifa Hospital, told the Post, "People stopped social distancing. They had no choice." As Common Dreams reported recently, the Zionist regime bombed Gaza's only coronavirus testing facility, and Dr. Ayman Abu Al-Auf, who helped lead the territory's coronavirus response, was one of at least 248 Palestinians killed. The loss of the testing lab will leave asymptomatic COVID-19 cases undetected, health officials told the Post, in a place where less than 2% of the population have been vaccinated. Recently, Al-Shifa Hospital was able to test 50 people and found that 40 tested positive for the coronavirus, leading to critical care beds being filled to capacity. Palestinian-American writer and political analyst Youssef Monayer tweeted recently that a public health nightmare would likely take hold in Gaza once the bombing stopped, as it did early Friday, May 20th, following a ceasefire. In addition to the crowding of hospitals and shelters where COVID-19 has apparently been able to spread rapidly, water supplies have been cut by 40% in Gaza, leading to sanitation concerns. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, recently called for $38 million in relief funding for food, water, health needs, and sanitation and hygiene. The agency said this despite the preparedness on UNRWA staff and UNRWA facilities in providing shelter in conflict, UNRWA now also contends with the unprecedented circumstances of the COVID-19 pandemic, while requires additional measures to be taken. The International Committee of the Red Cross told the Post it was sending medical supplies, including monitors, defibrillators and a mechanical ventilator to Gaza, while the COVAX vaccine program planned to deliver a shipment of coronavirus vaccine doses to the territory. However, the Zionist regime blockade will make it difficult for the equipment and doses of vaccines to reach overwhelmed hospitals quickly. UNRWA said the surge in COVID-19 cases will only worsen Gaza's already limited ability to recover from the latest Zionist regime bombardment. Every time there is a conflict in Gaza, intense air bombardment pulverizes basic infrastructure, homes, hospitals, and factories. Tamara Al-Rifai, spokesperson for UNRWA, said in a statement recently. He added, "It then takes UNRWA and aid agencies several years to rehabilitate their premises, and many homes and livelihoods of Gazans are never being rebuilt.
Of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is